This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 28th of February, 2022. And very interesting, of course, over the weekend, the scale of new sanctions. We had a very misguided impression of what was going on Friday. Clearly, it appeared really that there was an unwillingness to sanction too deeply, but perhaps we were a bit too early to judge, as perhaps it was just a question of they needed a bit more time to pull together the full package. And we did get pretty much the full package over the weekend, to say the least, in terms of the scale of these sanctions. There's still some very, very important details that are missing, especially on the SWIFT access by some Russian banks, that quote-unquote some. We don't know the list. We don't have the list. And that will be very important for the scale which it completely shuts, more or less, Russia out of the financial system, and especially the sanctions against the Russian Central Bank. Also critical to know what scale these are taking place. It essentially means that if they really completely freeze Russian Central Bank assets, it really just prevents the system from functioning internationally. Curious to see as well, if the knock-on effects are bad enough, you have all these oligarchs, elites in Russia that have been sanctioned. You have expat Russians that are wealthy, that are capped on the amount they can transfer in some cases, especially in the UK. All of this scrambling to move assets around and counterparty risk does require that central banks need to respond with liquidity measures. I can assume, I think safely, that they will move with those if there is some disruption risk. But I think that all in all, outside of the Russian ruble and Russian assets, the market's taking things reasonably well in stride. And we'll see how things develop from here. I think any news that looks like this, the actual military conflict on the ground, could wind up quickly because of Russian getting bogged down here and not being able to sustain this assault. We could just see suddenly a different market tomorrow. So it's really just day-to-day, headline-to-headline, and we'll have to see what comes out of these Ukrainian-Russian negotiations that are set to take place at the Belarus border today. I'm not really sure where to segue into here, but I mean, if you look at, again, the pretty modest market reaction, yes, we gapped a bit lower. We're down a couple of percent and more at times in the U.S. futures market. The usual safe havens, the dollar, the yen, the Swiss franc, all reacting. But you can see on our chart there on slide two, S&P 500 future, we're sort of back to where we started at Friday, merely after Friday tried to close on a very positive note. Again, what we identified as the key thing at the time, how much are the Western powers willing to harm their own interests in these sanctions? Over the weekend, it was very clear that they're willing to take some considerable risk in order to punish Russia for this. But nonetheless, I think this pretty modest reaction. So it looks reasonably measured here. But there are, of course, key stories. The Russian ruble itself, we'll get to that more in a bit. But things like BP, which was the last sort of oil major that had a very significant relationship here with a Russian oil company. And you're seeing these pretty dramatic steps around the market to sort of completely disassociate yourself with Russian activities.
Yeah, there has been considerable pressure from UK policymakers and politicians over the past week. That is what we have. That's the intel we've got, and it forced basically the hand of British Petroleum. They announced over the weekend that they are, with an immediate effect, withdrawing all their board of directors from the Rosneft, which is the major Russian oil company, from their board of directors, and they're going basically to exit their position. How that's going to take place and who will be the buyer and on what circumstances, wild guess at this point in time. You can see from the price reaction, I think BP was down 6%. So for now, the market is not contemplating that they will lose the maximum value that they could lose, which is around $25 billion, are some of the estimates. So because the market value in dollar terms for BP is roughly a little bit lower than $100 billion. So, you know, only 6% is very far away from the potential $25 billion, if you square those numbers. So let's see. But this will put enormous pressure on other companies in Europe with big Russian assets, because if they, you know, you can argue that if BP is willing to take the loss, are other companies like Carlsberg, Renault, are these companies also willing to take a loss? But I think the big news over the weekend was, of course, Germany's decision to set the military spending to above 2% of GDP indefinitely, at least until further notice. And this is a historic shift. And for equities, of course, the big impact is our defense basket. I've put it in here on slide three. This is a theme that could become a high growth, anti-cyclical for quite some time here. And of course, focus on the German's names. So that's Rheinmetall, just to mention one. Also, Dessau Aviation. Other companies, of course, on this list will be very positively impacted from this. So this is really a theme you need to watch.
And in that really historic speech yesterday with this special meeting of the Bundestag, it's just a big moment, a huge shift that was prompted by this. And we can't emphasize how much this has really changed the game for Germany. And he also indicated in the defense area that they wanted homegrown and European-based defense, not just, of course, perhaps buying a bunch of U.S., for example, weaponry.
Yes.
And there's a good quote on a different slide, slide five, a quote from a Bloomberg commentary piece from Andreas Klut. He says, in a historic session by the Bundestag, the German government bids adieu to decades of naivete. So it's a very interesting move here, really resets a lot of things geopolitically. But let's look very briefly at, let's jump to oil, because really that's where we're seeing the important impact for the global economy. And we're seeing global grades able to jump very significantly higher. There are a lot of moving parts here, but the key is, I guess, that, you know, regardless of the fact that a lot of these sanctions didn't specifically target necessarily the ability to transact financially in energy exports from Russia, there are other aspects in play here that are seeing that are reason oil prices have jumped back higher.
Indeed, John, because the global demand outlook has not suddenly turned more negative. Global demand is still very strong at this stage, and that obviously means that we need every barrel that can be produced. What we're seeing now over the past few days from Russia especially is that foreign buyers are basically balking at putting in orders for Russian oil. Shippers are also in certain cases refusing to load Russian oil, just with the risk of being stuck somewhere with oil that no one wants to take. So the impact for this is that we're seeing the Brent market back above $100, not quite reaching the highs from last week, but we're seeing the spread to between the first and the second months in Brent remaining very elevated, above close to $4, as you can see here on slide eight. Basically mean that there is a worry about tightness in the market. And that tightness is coming from potential lower supplies from Russia. That's priced in, you can see in the insert there as well. This is showing the discount that the Russian Urals oil is below, or how much is trading below Brent. And even though this chart is indicating around $8, $9, there are reports that we've seen that as low as $12. So the only thing we are experiencing right now is basically Russian oil in terms of prices dislocating from the rest of the market, and that leaves markets scrambling for supplies from elsewhere. And that obviously will add a lot of pressure on the Middle East. We got an OPEC Plus meeting coming up on Wednesday. There are some speculation that this could, if there is a lot of pressure applied on Middle Eastern producers, we could see some potential fireworks. But for now, OPEC Plus sticking to their guns, planning to increase production by the usual 400,000 barrels, which we obviously know is an illusion, because several countries have been struggling for months to produce their quota. So we are still in a situation where the only thing right now that really could solve the situation or alleviate the situation is increased barrels from Iran, a nuclear agreement, or further down the line, that we start to see demand getting impacted by a slowdown in growth.
All right. And then again, the impact across markets reasonably muted. So I'll just rewind a little bit to where we can see the Russian ruble itself. So with these sanctions, there's some level of a bank run today in Russia as people are trying to secure their foreign currency. The doubts over the ability of the Russian financial system to interface with the world is seeing essentially a crash in the ruble. The Russian central bank, as I show on slide four, little news items there, out hiking rates 1,150 basis points to a 20% rate, and dollar ruble has crashed around 25%. I think when I snapped that chart, it was down even more overnight. And then you see the impact elsewhere, just in terms of risk sentiment. Of course, I showed the equity impact, but it's been worth about 10 basis points of Fed tightening being taken out of the forward curve by the end of this year, as I'm showing on that September 2022. Short-term interest rate future there also on slide four on the right side there. Very important actually to see the guidance from the Fed this week, as we have the State of the Union tomorrow from the U.S., and we have Fed Chair Powell finally now on the schedule for that semi-annual testimony on Wednesday and Thursday. And then elsewhere in FX and other markets, fairly modest, again, a reaction into the German market, that those lows recently, very key, those lows below 14,000 in a technical sense, that was a big major high before this these levels were reached late last year and early into this year. And Euroswiss not even able to take out the new lows around 103. So that 103 area in Euroswiss, and then on the next slide there on slide six, the euro dollar, those lows around 111.20 have been in play. But to my mind, things looking relatively stable here, given the backdrop, and ready to pounce higher if, let us hope, the situation improves. Then there's the angle on gold, Ola. It's a really interesting debate and a lot of moving parts there, as well as, you know, Russia has been a massive buyer of gold. And there's, you know, the idea that we had the backdrop headed one way, supportive of gold, but then the whole Russian situation could mean a supply situation that has sort of changed the equation there.
Yeah, and that's really, I think, one of the big unknowns right now in the gold market, one that that also preventing the price from moving higher. Because if we're looking at what's happening right now, we're seeing commodity prices moving up once again. We're seeing central banks' potential ability to curb inflation by a high rate hikes somewhat diminishing, because they may have to focus on actually supplying liquidity back into the market if the situation worsens as we see it right now. So it's left some speculation open for speculation that Russia basically holding the second biggest position is in gold. It's 23% of its reserves, worth around $140 billion. It has been stable now throughout the last year or so, as you can see on the insert here on slide seven. But I think there's several reasons why that they probably won't at this moment start selling out the gold. But I think it's hanging over the market as a risk, because if they really get into a very tight corner in terms of liquidity, they will obviously need to look for how they can get some liquidity in, and gold could be one of them. So I think that's the main reason why we opened up at 1930, gapped higher. We already back down to 1900. It needs to hold above that 1877 level in order to avoid any further long liquidation from recently established longs, because there's been a lot of fresh buying in gold over the last month.
And we also have the gas picture. You know, it's back and forth, of course, and we have to, I guess, worry that there is the risk of some kind of physical severing of the deliveries into Europe when you have a hot war where a lot of the pipelines trans you know, go under Ukraine, etc. But what are we looking for here? I mean, it's really the same story, I guess, as with oil to a degree, or is it a bit different focus?
It is, but then it also has the turn or the additional impact on other production of other commodities, such as the metals. We saw a 35% jump on the opening gas. Again, we've seen that some of that price action does come off a little bit. On the insert on slide nine, you can see that inventories are starting to move within the five-year range. So we are heading towards spring. The big problem is obviously how will we be able to replenish gas stocks over the coming over the summer. And we can see that as a result, gas for next winter is still trading above 100 euros, i.e. punitively expensive prices. And that basically means something like aluminium production is very high. This is a chart from Morgan Stanley. They're indicating that to produce 1 ton of aluminium, that requires the same amount of energy as an average US family household using electricity in a year. So that just indicates how expensive it is to produce metals. And that will have an impact on supplies as well.
Yeah, and I think the situation in the gas market, we mentioned it on Friday with the whole LNG market. I'll be writing about it today. There was not enough time on Friday to do it, but today we will. And it's one of those trades, LNG as heat pumps, which is very big from Japanese companies. Everything green related. So whether or not you think it's a good idea or not, I mean, it's becoming a political trade. So I think those three themes are key to watch as well. And with the German historic Bundestag discussion yesterday, there was also the announcement and strategic decision to, as quickly as possible, build two large LNG terminals in the northern part of Germany. And Ola, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but I mean, if you try to go inside the heads of the European politicians, I mean, there are two countries that comes to mind, maybe that potential new allies out of necessity. Venezuela or Iran, right? I assume that Europe must be contemplating key discussion with other countries and maybe also helping extracting gas.
Yeah, I could redraw the map as we become used to, because has what we've seen over the past week has been a game changer. Just see the reaction, as John mentioned, from Germany. The LNG is a plaster on the wound, if you can say it. It's just sending a strong signal that we want to. Yes, we've been fast asleep. We've been relying too much on steady supplies through the new Nord Stream 2 gas line, so we don't really have to worry about coal and nuclear. That has changed completely. So we will see increased attempts to lessen the dependency on gas from Russia. But this is not today or tomorrow, not even next year. So we are still faced with a number of years where we really would have to pay high prices if the gas is not flowing from Russia.
Something tells me it may eventually flow sooner rather than later, but we'll get to that as the situation develops. What are you looking today in this market? There's so much to look at in this market for the fallen impacts, as you've mentioned, companies with large Russian operations, but what else is on your list?
Yeah, we mentioned BP already. We are on slide 10, by the way, in today's slide deck. Other stocks, of course, to watch today with big Russian exposure is companies like Carlsberg here in Denmark, Big Brewer, Renault, Uniper, which sits inside the utility industry together with Fortum. Vion is in telecommunication. Polymetrol and Evraz are two miners. You have Neste in the oil refining business, Rockwool within construction materials. You have Raiffeisen, which is an Austrian bank, and you have Danone as well from France. So there's plenty of companies that will be under pressure today. And I think scrutinized by a journalist. Again, BP with their decision on Rosneft is putting enormous pressure on other European companies to decide what to do with their Russian assets. I will mention the two theme baskets. We already mentioned the defense basket. Also, cybersecurity should be doing quite well in the coming weeks. And then we had that big earnings release from Berkshire Hathaway over the weekend. A few highlights, very strong results. Warren Buffett did this interview where he said most people think about Berkshire Hathaway as a scramble of a lot of financial assets. But in effect, if you look at our balance sheets, the planned property and equipment, which are physical assets on the balance sheet, Berkshire Hathaway now is the largest industrial company in the U.S. As he said, we are basically the backbone of the U.S. economy. They bought back $27 billion worth of their own shares last year, but they still have $147 billion of cash on the balance sheet. And potentially the current situation that is unfolding must be potentially an opening path for Berkshire to acquire some large asset, I suppose.
Oh, okay. They're not big enough. Okay. There was also interesting. We mentioned the story as well before we came in here. For example, Volkswagen has some... Yeah. Assembly factory actually in Ukraine that's linked to its most important EV push.
Wiring, right? Ryan.
Some kind of wiring sets or something, which is going to mean they'll have to idle thousands of workers at a couple of key German factories. So the knock-on effects are not inconsiderable. And earnings quieting down, but you still got quite a long list here, Peter, on the earnings overview for the week ahead.
Yeah, slide 11, very quickly. Today's key focus, of course, is Zoom, the massive, pandemic winner. We almost back to square. Incredible story. I still don't think, I think it will be difficult for Zoom to have an independent future because there's such an onslaught from Microsoft and other large software makers in their realms of what they're selling, which is video communication software. Actually, we're using that right now for this podcast. And elsewhere, the focus, of course, is on the technology companies like Salesforce, Sea Limited, Baidu. They're reporting tomorrow. We have Snowflake on Wednesday, and we have Elastic on Thursday, which is one of the big ones here in Europe. We also have Zalando tomorrow on e-commerce, and then we have Neo tomorrow, and we have Lucid, which are two EV makers. So that's sort of the interesting things. And then two others I've highlighted that normally companies I would look at all, but Kuhne plus Nagel, which is a German logistics company. With everything that's taking place right now with the conflict in Ukraine, I think any comments from the management team, what they're seeing on the ground right now and how logistics are being impacted, I think is super critical to get color on where we are in the macro. And then CRH on Thursday, which is the massive United Kingdom, Irish building materials.
Oh, don't make that mistake.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Sorry, really, I'm sorry. Irish Incorporated. This is a building construction, a construction materials manufacturer. And I think with the rising and galloping inflation prices we're seeing on building materials, I think this is another company that is worth having a look at.
Interesting stuff. Okay, again, on the macro calendar, I don't think normally we would have a lot of highlights on what is going on this week, and we still could see some very interesting things that we'll need to store for future interpretation by the markets, because the markets right now are so laser focused on developments around Ukraine. And we have that, again, that peace, or not peace talks, but negotiations of some form between Ukraine and Russia taking place on the Belarusian border today. I do not have a time for that. I'll look, of course, for that. But if we do, if we are able to sort of absorb other interesting inputs into this market, you can see the list there on slide 12. There's an RBA meeting up tonight. It's been the reluctant dove, and I've just been really remarking and been very impressed with the Aussie's resilience, as we've looked at how it's traded through this whole episode of market volatility. Biden, with his State of the Union address, historically unpopular president for where he is in his presidency. And then we have Fed Chair Powell out. It's important to hear from the Fed chair himself after we've had a bit of back and forth on the degree to which a quick liftoff is advisable or not in March. I would think that without this distraction in Ukraine, et cetera, that he would be strongly in favor of 50 basis points in March. But let's see what he has to say. It'll be important. And then the Friday employment report, and especially the average hourly earnings as an input into inflationary risks. All right. It's a lot going on out there. Stay on your toes. Be careful out there. And we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.